This is Adam Francis, and you're listening to the Equipped Indoor Podcast on the E2E Radio Network. Stand by for a great show. Hey guys, welcome back for another great episode of the Equipped Indoor Podcast, episode 412, with your host Adam Francis, Robert Oliver, and Dan Eastland. And we're back, guys, after a good couple weeks of internet and equipment misfortune. And so we're getting ready to do a great podcast today. I pick up my headset and it explodes in my hands. So right now, thank gosh, I always carry some Gorilla Tape. So Robbie, if you hear my microphone kind of flopping around, it's because the headset's broken right on the left side, kind of where the size adjusts. You know what I'm talking about?
That's kind of depressing. I thought you were going to say it was going to sound like a gorilla.
No, yeah. I wish it was going to sound like a gorilla. And it's weird because, you know, you're using that nice snug headset, you know, on your ears, you know, that feeling that it's nice and tight, and it's not. I can, like, feel it, like, all wobbly. It's kind of distracting, so that's already too much information. But, guys, how are you been doing? It's been a couple weeks since we've been on, and I'm sure a lot's going on. Ryan, let's start with you. I know you have some exciting things going on in your world.
Yeah, that's one way of putting it. We had the storm of the century here. Let's see, destroyed the house, need a new roof on the house, new siding, new back deck. Busted out windows, totaled my truck.
Totaled it. That a hailstorm that totals a truck. Yeah, so what was the estimate for how much it's going to cost to fix your truck?
I think it was like $9,000 or $10,000.
And we're not talking about a Geo Metro here.
No. $9,000 or $10,000, but the way the insurance company does it, if it's like over 70% of the value, then it's totaled.
They're done. That's crazy, man. That sucks. Well, anything good come out of any of this last recent couple weeks?
Found a house closer to where my wife's job is, so we may be moving soon. We got a bid in on the house, and it was accepted. So now it's all up to the broker and lawyers and bankers and all the big people to tell us little people where we can live and what we can do.
Well, nothing bad could happen from that.
No way with lawyers and bankers involved, anything negative could possibly happen.
Well, all the bad luck here recently, you got to have some good luck in there.
Yeah, I'm paying into the karma pool, actually. That's what's kept me from pulling all my hair out, was that I figure I'm paying in for something good.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, you know, I think I saw pictures of it. The place looks awesome. And if they took the bid, that means they seriously want to sell it to you. So now you guys just got to get that process. And hopefully here in 30 days, you guys will be settling on a nice place. That place needs to be the new Equipped Indoor headquarters, man.
That's what I'm thinking.
I got to come down there every weekend and shoot videos with you.
And dog training center.
I'm excited. It's actually got a building out back that was already set up as a kennel. With concrete pads outside, and you know, the inside is even got a doggy wash, like a bath area, and kind of like a bathtub with side that's cut out with a door on it, so the dog can just walk in. No lifting big heavy mutts and setting them over the side or anything like that.
And now that you got Rowdy, you're going to need that.
Yeah. Well, you know what? He actually, for whatever reason, never smells that bad. Like,
that's because he's a puppy.
I guess Kimba, you know, you give her a bath, and the next day you're like, I thought I gave you a bath yesterday, but you smell kind of funky. Rowdy, on the other hand, you know, 2, 3 weeks, 4 weeks go by, and you're like, you still smell like soap. Cool.
Yeah.
Macha put up such a we'll just say she is hydrophobic. And after the whole skunk incident,
so she repels water.
She does.
Okay,
but not skunk spray. So I took her down to the groomers. I took both of them down to the groomers, and they called me a couple hours later. Now keep in mind, this is a month after she'd gotten skunk sprayed, and the groomer calls me and says, "Is there a chance that maybe your dog had gotten skunk sprayed?" And I said, well, "Yes, there is." She goes, "Yeah, we noticed a little bit of a scent. We're going to put some deodorant on it." I kept thinking, how could they possibly smell it a month later? And after we were gone for a couple of days, I came back to the house and realized that it was time for some spring cleaning.
You guys got nose blind to it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm starting to understand why people quit coming over for dinner.
Well, if your dog doesn't like bath time now,
Yeah.
having actually seen it in person and been there the night of the skunk incident
Yeah.
and seen the bath that she took in like 10-degree weather,
Fair point.
I would be afraid of baths at this point too.
Did you damage your dog, Dan? Is that
Yeah.
Robbie saying?
I damaged her less than Beth would if I had brought her in that house.
The dog, to be honest, Adam, the
Yeah.
dog was puking from her own scent, smell,
Oh, really?
and the other dog and any human that got close to her started gagging. So, in retrospect, it was the more humane of the, let the dog smell that way or give her the bath, and give her the bath was the more humane thing. But wow, I can't. I'm glad it was her, not me. That's all I can say.
Oh, if it had been you, I'd just shot you.
Yeah, I would have asked for it.
Oh,
Just shoot me, Dan.
man.
I'm not gonna make it.
Freaking skunks.
Tell my wife and kids I love them. Divide up my gear.
Rosebud.
You know you want to be buried with your gear just in case.
Yeah, you got a point.
All right,
Especially the
well.
places I might be going.
I'll wake up in a coffin going, yeah, I never have a knife when I need one.
You'll be doing that 1-inch punch thing like from Kill Bill.
The 5-finger death punch.
Yeah. Well, no, to get out of the coffin, she was doing that 1-inch
Oh,
punch.
okay.
Yeah. Hey, Dan, don't question me on Quentin Tarantino movies ever again.
Hey,
All right?
I knew there had to be something you were good at.
We need to send Quentin Tarantino an E2E2 shirt.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard on the web that Quentin will actually wear any t-shirt people send him.
Really?
And a friend of a friend, my wife's cousin, I think, has some small business. Anyway, he sent a t-shirt to Quentin, and I think it was worn in Pulp Fiction.
Mm-hmm.
That's
He
pretty
actually
sweet.
wore it.
Well, that's pretty cool. But of course, now that we've released that sequel,
Yeah.
everybody's going to beat us to it, Robbie. Good job.
Thanks, Robert.
You're in charge of the editing, dude.
Dude, I don't think I have the tolerance to edit this podcast. I already had to live through it once. You want me to listen to it again? Well, Dan, what else is going on with you besides your stinky dogs?
We have had numerous opportunities to overcome adversity here lately. But I'm glad to say that everybody is getting better and things are working out.
Well, good. Good to hear.
And can we go ahead and talk about the new company?
Sure.
All right.
Well,
So,
actually, you need to ask your PR manager first.
yeah.
If you're talking about me, I think, yeah, absolutely. Let's.
So, the two things I've always wanted to do is make a very high quality knife and make a knife that as many people can use as possible.
Okay.
And
So when are you going to start that, Dan?
your knife just went to the bottom of the pile, Adam.
Well, you know what? That's my new thing. I want to see how long I can make it go. Because at one point you're going to need me to put it in a video and show everybody it. So, we'll play this. We'll play this dance, sir.
Ah, shoot.
And now one will be in the mail this week.
Yeah. So I'm going to send two knives up to you.
Okay.
Because I've come to realize that making knives by hand, no matter how efficient you try to be, is just slow. So we've gotten some proven patterns from dogwood, some handle geometry, some blade geometry that just works. So we are now going to start a semi-production to full production knife line based on the dogwood patterns. And it is going to be called Heritage Blades.
I like the name. Who came up with that?
Actually, some of the Facebook family came up with it.
Okay,
After
nice.
a long list of rejected names by my PR guy and my wife, I finally just went to Facebook on the Dogwood page and said, "Hey, if someone was going to start a production knife company, what would be some good names?" And I like it because there's a type of English oak called a heritage oak. So it keeps in line with the Dogwood Custom Knives, the Heritage Oak, and at least I do have a lot of association with the trustworthy and the quality of oak. Mm-hmm. Even though it's simple, you know, it's not a black walnut, but it's a good, solid quality material to work with.
I'm with you. I'm tracking. So is that guy going to get a sample knife?
Yeah, I got to work out. There's three of them that all had the same idea nearly simultaneously. But yes, there will be some heritage swag to possibly include one of the prototypes going out to him.
Awesome.
And we were basing the first prototype on the Echo 5.
Okay.
And once production is in full swing, then we'll start adding some patterns. But we're going to start the Echo 5. Slightly modified. You'll see it when you get the prototype. I'm going to mail it out to you today.
Awesome. Well, I can't wait. Well, speaking of Dogwood Customs, I guess we should do our sponsors, right, Robbie?
Would be nice.
I mean, that's the only thing, you know, Robbie's in charge of the podcast, and the only thing he ever asks me to do is talk about our sponsors. And, of course, the Equipped Entrepreneur podcast is brought to you by Dogwood Custom Knives. Check out Dogwood Custom Knives at dogwoodcustomknives.com. Dealers at USA Made Blades, Edgeworks at Edgeworks Online, and Arizona Custom Knife. And also Live Fire Gear LLC. Check us out at livefiregear.com. Hey, guys, just so you know, the zipper pulls were a huge, huge hit. They are back-ordered. But hopefully by the time that you hear this podcast, we'll have them back. We'll have them back. We had a little delay on getting the actual zipper pull clips. We ran out of them real fast. So we didn't think that we needed as many as we need. So we got an order of 10,000 coming. So
well, that's a nice problem to have.
Well, you mean a company could have this explosive unprepared demand and then they really have to struggle to catch up with that?
It happens, apparently.
Wow, I can't imagine
do
that.
Anything about that.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because, you know, Roger and I were talking about the zipper pulls, and it was one of those things where, you know, we wanted to make it happen. We wanted to make a really economic zipper pull. We figured out how to make them pretty quickly and get everything squared away. Roger designs all the creative, like all the display cards and all the other stuff and the advertising. And we had a really good idea. I was like, oh, this would be cool. And we were trying to make it work. Well, when we started pricing it out, it was really expensive because of the packaging and all that other stuff. And we're like, oh, man, I don't know if we could do this. Because at first we were going to only buy like 200 cards to do 200 sets. We didn't know how many we would have to do. And so we're doing the math. And I'm like, oh, man, I mean, like this would work if we, you know, got an order of like 10,000. But if we get an order of like 200, we're losing money. And so we waited to release it because we're going to release it at the beginning of the year. And then we're like, all right, let's just do it. Let's just take the chance. You know, right now we're doing okay. You know, we can afford the loss if nobody picks these things up. And they pick them up, and it's like, boom, everybody, like, wants them. And which I was kind of surprised about. Not that it's not a cool item. It's an awesome item. And I think it's, like, I put them on my coats.
Yeah, it's a great use of the material, too.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. But, like, all of, like, my other zipper pulls from my bags, I just use 550 fire cord because I want it a little bit longer.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, well, are people going to use these for their coats? Are they using them for their bags? Are they using them for both? But, you know, they're going crazy. And it's also cool to see what the popular colors are. Because at first it was like thin red line and black. And now all of a sudden, like coyote. I don't know if like the outdoor guys or the military guys are starting to find 550 fire cord. But all of a sudden, it's like we can't keep coyote in. And I'm talking about we're ordering, you know, 24,000 feet at a time, and it's like gone in no time. So it's pretty cool, man. It's very neat to see those little paracord trends now that I'm in the paracord business, per se. Per se. Anyway, but yeah, guys, we'll have some more of those here soon. I know they just got the clips in, so they'll be back on the website. And, of course, tons of dealers. If you go to the new Live Fire gear.com website, there's actually a find a distributor, and if you click on that, there's a map of the world, and you type in your address, and it'll show you the closest spot where you can buy Live Fire from, so you'll get your 550 paracord fix and everything. Of course, it's on Amazon all over, and Amazon Canada, Amazon UK, and of course Amazon in America. We have dealers all the way in, you know, Australia to Japan, all over Europe. I think we got our first South American dealer. I think the only continent that we're not in is, of course, Antarctica and Africa. So
that's two continents.
Well, yeah, I know, but Antarctica didn't really count. I was going to say Africa, but then I was like, you know what? If I don't say Antarctica, some
Adam,
what's up?
Just to make that easier, you should just go ahead and mail all four people that live in Antarctica. Just go ahead and mail those four people a piece.
Yeah, they're probably the people who really need it, right?
Oh man, you want to talk about extreme testing?
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny story. I had my high school reunion a few years back, and I'm sitting at a table talking to all these people that I used to know. And of course, you know, there's only like 20 people who came. We had a pretty large class, but everybody was a scientist. And like you guys know, I'm a big science buff, and you know, I was going to get into science, you know, professionally, but you know, my math score, I just kind of slacked off on my math scores, and then I got, you know, started going to school for philosophy and then became a cop, which is kind of weird. So I'm sitting there talking to these guys and, you know, keeping up with the conversation, like, oh, they're like, well, what do you do? You know, what do you research? And like, oh, I'm not a scientist, I'm a cop. And they're looking at me like bewildered, like, really? And are you like forensics? I'm like, no, I just, you know, I enjoy all this stuff. There, you know, one guy was a mathematician.
Adam Francis, science cop.
Yeah. One guy was a mathematician. One guy was a marine biologist. And we had a physicist. And he's like, well, you're really into this, though, aren't you? I'm like, yeah, you know, I like it. And he's like, well, you know, if you really want to make some, like, really good money and you don't need a degree, but you can make, like, tons of money, like, you can go to Antarctica for 6 months. And I was like, really? He's like, awesome. He's like, how much do you make? He's like $60,000 a year. And I'm like, yeah, dude, I'm not going to Antarctica for $60,000. You're outside of your mind, man. I mean,
that's crazy. No bikinis, I'm not going.
That's right, man. Well, on my side of things, it's been a long couple weeks, guys. And for those of you looking for additional Equipped and Door videos, I apologize. Life has been kind of crazy here at the Francis household. We have a very sick family member. I know I've told you guys a lot throughout the years. You know, my relationship with my grandparents, my parents were super young when they had me. So I, you know, was probably, you know, at my grandparents' house, either living with them or staying there. If we were living someplace else, probably up till I was 9 years old. And even then, every weekend we were out there when my parents were going to school and everything. And so the kind of the matriarch of the family, she was in the hospital. She actually just left the hospital yesterday. It was some serious stuff. She went there because she had a heart attack, found out she had two. And they wanted to do some surgery, but she was too frail, so they had to do a procedure, which she had about a 50-50 shot. And God bless her, she made it through, and she's on the mend. She's not totally out of the woods yet. It's still a long journey for her. But you know what, man? It's good. You know, everybody's happy that, you know, she did what she did. So I've been driving down to D.C. a lot here recently. Missed some work. So she was going to come actually move in with us, but my grandfather wants to give it a go and see if she can stay at their house. And you know, if they need additional help, they might move in with us. So it's been a time. And Robbie, you understand because you kind of went through this a few months ago.
Yeah, very similar situation. I spent more time with my grandparents than I did my parents.
Yeah.
Know exactly how you feel.
So it was, you know, we're getting back to normalcy, and then there's a lot of other stuff going on. So, yeah, man, there hasn't been much time to do anything but work and travel and, you know, spend time with family. And, you know, a few people out there know and send out all their prayers and everything, and thank you guys. It means a lot. And so we're doing pretty well right now. We're going to go see her actually soon as I finish recording this podcast. So, guys, I won't have time to chat afterwards. I apologize. Nothing.
Fully understand.
Nothing personal. but we did get to do some stuff on the E2E side. And for those of you guys on the website, and remember, guys, if you're not part of the website, sign up. Very, very low price. I think you can sign up for like $8 a year, you know, 50 cents a day. And we might even make it a little bit less expensive than that. We have a new program that we'll be pushing out here soon. I'll let you guys know some more details here. But one very cool thing is, of course, we have the giveaway. You know, we're doing probably too much 2 weeks of giveaways, or a giveaway for 2 weeks every few weeks. I'm basically going through all of the knives and gear that I've had over the years that I've kind of accumulated and kind of paying it forward and putting out a contest. And we have a really good way of doing it that's very inexpensive for everybody to join, but there's not a huge cost for us with shipping. And that's always the biggest problem is to ship these things, especially international. We've had stuff that, I've had guys win something in Australia and it's like $40 a ship out there. So that becomes a problem. So basically through the Fair Play, and if you have a Fair Play account through the Equipped Nord website, you're already squared away. But basically you can go in and click the link and basically buy a raffle ticket that only costs a cent. It is still free, totally free to join. You can actually mail in your bid, but then of course you got to pay 32 cents to mail it in. So it just makes more sense to do electronically because that's 32 entries instead of one entry for the same price as a stamp. And what happens is we just Fair Play sends us a UPS tracking thing and we slap it on the box and hit a button, and then all of a sudden you guys get it in the mail, and we don't have to pay anything for shipping. You guys don't have to pay anything for shipping. And it really helps us out, and that way we can get some gear out to people. And I'm pretty excited about this, man. I like the whole idea of pushing out gear. We've been giving away gear for God, 6 years now, and I'm always happy to forward something out to somebody so they can enjoy it and use it and everything like that. Now, I will say we are probably going to do a couple big giveaways here soon too, so just stay tuned. Right now, we're giving away an Ontario Rat 5. And Robbie, you really liked that blade back in the day. You liked it a little bit better than the Essie RC5 because it wasn't as thick, and I threw a convex edge on that one as well. So if you want a big knife, a big camp knife, but at the same time you don't want a big camp knife that weighs a pound, it's not a bad blade.
No,
So
it's not. And they've always had good heat treats, and they've always, been building with quality, so.
yeah. So we'll be pushing that out. Also, we have some great video series coming from our friend James Montana over there in Taiwan. We're calling it the Jungle Bum series. That's we're giving James that handle. He's the Jungle Bum. Some quick tip jungle fire starters. One, we also had one where he's making a bamboo pot and cook kit, which I'm kind of jealous. I mean,
That was very cool.
bamboo is like the bane of anybody who owns property because it's like a weed. I mean, you got to be really careful with that stuff because you can never get rid of it. And a lot of people think it looks pretty and everything, but then after, 10 or 15 years, the stuff is huge. It really becomes a problem. But it is so versatile, man. I mean, it is everywhere. Between, bamboo and banana trees out in the jungle, you pretty much have everything you need. So yeah, James has been doing some really cool videos. He has a couple plant identification videos and some uses. And it's really cool, man. Like, not to say that we have, that kind of stuff over here, but if I ever get lost in the jungle, man, I definitely pick up some skills from James. Also, we got a really good series from Madison Parker for our Madison Mondays. Madison's been making a bow. He started out backing the bow with some snakeskin, and now he's tailoring it and stringing his bow. So that's a long series. We have more of that that's coming out each Monday, and our Jungle Bums videos are coming out every Wednesday. So stay tuned on the website for that, guys. Remember, it's very inexpensive, and jump on. And last but not least, I've been doing some interesting video with 550 fire cord, kind of showing the different uses you can do. And I've been kind of looking at it and updating my own kit. And you guys would think that I have 550 fire cord everywhere, but I've actually not really. What's the term, Rob? You get high on your own supply? Is that correct?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I've been trying to, because it's such high demand, and we get sold out of stuff a lot early, so I don't want to take any away when the customers get it first. But now I'm starting to try to rethink how I use my paracord and re-engineer fire kits in pretty much everywhere I would have paracord normally. So,
Don't worry, Adam. I'll get high on your supply for you.
well, that's the other problem. Every time I get some samples to play around with, these two guys show up and rob me of all my stuff.
Which
So,
reminds me, I need some more.
well, you guys are welcome to come down, man. You guys are welcome to come down. We're gonna put out the furniture on the deck here soon and do some barbecuing. So,
Well, and there's a little movie premiere coming up too.
oh yeah, you down for Avengers 2, Dan?
I believe I am.
Thursday, I think we're doing it Thursday, the 30th of April.
There's an off chance that Beth will actually let me out of the shop for 2 days in the same week.
Yeah,
So.
man. Well, I'm off that Wednesday, Thursday. So I do have to work Friday, but I'm not working until 10 o'clock Friday night.
All right.
So if you want to come down Wednesday and we can hang out, do some videos, maybe go out for overnight or something,
See, then I could write it off. Then I'm not playing. I'm working, baby. I got to go to a business meeting.
That's right. That's right. We might be able to get a game or two off as well. You know
Yeah.
Wh when
what
is
I mean? Nudge,
this?
nudge.
April 29th and 30th, I'm off. And the movie comes out here. They have a 7 p.m. viewing the day before it comes out. Well, they actually have a 7 p.m., a 9, 11, and a midnight showing. It's crazy.
Okay, today is the 16th. You said that's the
Yeah.
29th and 30th, right?
Yeah, so 2 weeks from today. Come on down.
I don't even know if I have transportation by then, dude.
We might have to get you a bus ticket.
Amtrak, baby. Amtrak.
There you go. There you go. How Raleigh's got an international airport, right, Robbie?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Hey, at this point, I can't even get to Raleigh. What are you talking about? I had to find a taxi cab that'll come out in the middle of
We'll
nowhere.
get you a shuttle.
Yeah.
Frontier's got some pretty good rates.
Yeah. So, I really want to talk about the Avengers and everything. Actually, you know what? I want to make a complaint
All
here.
right.
I want to make a complaint here real quick. I'm going to get in my soapbox.
Okay, but before you go to sci-fi,
Yeah.
save something for the second hour. This is still the gear conversation hour.
Okay. I just want to say one quick thing, and I'll let it go. I
I
am
doubt
into
it.
a wide plethora of nerdy stuff. Everything from, my comic book stuff you guys know about to guns. I would even consider the outdoor stuff to be kind of nerdy. You know what I
Are
mean?
you're Nerdus Maximus, man?
I am. I have a plethora of nerdy skill sets and everything from painting to throwing up a hammock to some very good shooting and everything. And I love my Batman and I love my DC comic stuff, And I'm really excited about the Batman and Superman movie. But when it gets to the point that our movie trailers have trailers, that's a problem. When you give a 5 second trailer just showing Superman's costume and Batman's costume and 5 days away from the trailer, we're getting a little, uppity. All right, guys, it's a little much, So
We're reaping what we sow.
I it, it's you know I, and I, I'm so
And by
you know
we,
I'm
I mean you.
I'm I'm happy that the geek culture is at its pinnacle. I'm okay with that. But I mean, come on, fellas, that's just getting downright stupid. I mean, the Batman costume still looked pretty badass. I'm not gonna lie.
I'm gonna try to stick in until they write Star Wars and Star Trek in with each other, and then I'm done. We're tearing the whole place down.
Well, it happens. It happens. So. All right, well, Robbie, well, Dan, why don't you go ahead and you got some interesting conversations, some stuff that the listeners want to listen to. They probably want to listen to about Age of Ultron as well, but we're going to go ahead and do some real stuff. So why don't
Guys,
you
I
hit it
don't
off?
want to forget our listeners' comments this
Well,
week.
let's do that. Let's do
Let's do
that.
questions
Yeah,
first.
let's do that first. Robbie, you want to go ahead and read them off?
I can. Eric S., one of our listeners, writes in, "Hey, Adam, Robbie, and Dan, I've been listening to your podcast and watching your videos for a few years now. Thank you for that, Eric. I have a few questions for you guys. First question. I've always been taught that if you can see green on a tree or signs that the tree is alive, then you should leave it alone and find another tree to cut down for firewood or whatever purpose you need it for. And in my honest opinion, that respect has been lost over the years. Let's see if I can get to the question aspect. Are parents not teaching that they're to their kids anymore? I have two kids of my own, and they are being taught to respect the woods. I see it all the time from YouTubers going out in the woods and cutting down living trees to test a blade or a saw, and I'm curious what your opinions on the subject. I believe this is wrong. If it's a living, leave it alone. There are plenty of dead trees for everyone to cut down, and or dead trees on the ground you can test your equipment on. He has a second question. Second question. I know you guys are advocates for axe over large knife, but me and my little brother are the opposite in our thinking. Not to start an argument or anything, I would like to know your opinions on very large knives, pretty much machetes on steroids. For example, I used the Zombie Tools Hooligan 18-inch blade, 3/16 inch thick, with a weight-forward design. I think it's a lot more fun to gather firewood with over an axe. Granted, we do get really weird looks on the trail. Thank you guys for all your entertainment you provide to us. And he's not talking about a survival situation here with the knife questions. Just talking about camping and relaxing, not life or death situation. Your friend, Eric.
All right. Do you want me to start, Robbie?
Knock yourself out.
Well, in regards to the living tree thing, I think that you shouldn't, you know, take down a living tree if you can take a dead tree down. But I will say that that is a little bit more complex because, you know, young sap, you know, trees, forests have stages of their development, like any other, you know, kind of organism. And there are situations where you have competing growths. So if you chop down one of the competing growths, that's probably not going to survive. I don't have such a big issue with it, especially if you need a younger, springier piece of green wood when I'm doing my bushcraft stuff. And so it's one of those things where I guess from outside it looks like you're just, you know, killing something living, but in, I don't even want to say in the tree world, I mean, those two organisms are going to kill one another. You know, one of them is going to die.
Two stunted trees have less value than one healthy tree.
Exactly. So if you don't know the difference, then don't chop it down. And if you know the difference, well, then you can get away with it. The second thing is, if it's your property, and I used to stay on a piece of property where the owner wanted everything cut down but a certain type of tree. And so if it wasn't a oak, he wanted it down because he wanted oaks on that piece of property. I don't know why he wanted oaks on that piece of property. So, you know, part of the reason that we camped there is because he didn't want to go down there and chop out all the oaks anyway. So his grandson's like, well, hey, you know, my grandfather, he hires people to go chop down anything that's out of oak. But if we chop down anything that's out of oak, he'll let us stay there for free. Well, you know, that was another different situation. So there's that. So it's a complex thing. I don't think it's as simple as never cut down a living thing. But you do need to be mindful of whose property you're on and what they want and what, you know, is healthy for the environment. But at the same time, it's not, I don't think it's as easy as a do this or don't do this type of situation. I think it's a more complex than people would say. But 9 times out of 10, you are right. There is something that is around there that you can go ahead and use for firewood, and it's going to be better firewood anyway because something green doesn't burn very well at all.
I disagree with you.
You don't think that there's better stuff?
Wait, I'm sorry. I'm just shocked, Robbie. You're disagreeing.
Why don't I tell you what? Before I go off on my tangent, Dan, do you want to go?
Oh no! You've already warned me that we're in a minefield. I'm going to go ahead and let you go off.
First of all, environmental differences. All this standing dead wood that I'm supposed to be cutting. Have you been to the south? if it's dead, by the time it's, you know, by the time I find it, it's already rotting. You know, we don't have standing dead wood like you guys up north have.
Yeah.
Just don't happen. Too much humidity and too many high winds with hurricanes, tornadoes, and all that kind of stuff is gone. It's obliterated. To your point about your property versus someone else's property, if it's my property, then I don't have to make any kind of justifications to anybody as to why I brought that tree down. That tree belongs to me. That's why I paid for it. If you want to protect that tree, you buy that property and let that tree live. And then, of course, to your point about the healthy growth, you know, a stand that is too densely populated is an opportunity not only for one tree to choke out another, but also rampant disease to take place.
And then fire hazards.
And then fire hazards. There is a even on public land, an important aspect to maintaining the health of the forest. And the, you know, going in and taking out select trees is a big part of that.
I'm not sure about what part you're disagreeing with me on.
The part about it's always better to go cut something dead. If I need a ridge pole, I can't have a rotten ridge pole.
No, yeah, I'm talking about for firewood. But I guess you don't have firewood down there like we have it up here.
Immediately after it dies, it takes about 6 seconds to fall. And then once it hits the ground, you got like 15, 20 seconds before it gets soft and punky.
You're hoping it falls on your chainsaw. Because that's about the only way you're gonna get that first cut in before it starts to rot. But a lot of times what I see people taking down in videos and stuff isn't big enough for firewood anyway. It's shelter building stuff and all that. 4 inches or less. And in that case, if it's shelter building stuff, there's no way for me to find anything without going ahead and cutting something green
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. And I
where
mean,
I live.
well, and the key is once you determine you got to cut something green, pick doing the least amount of damage. If you've got two saplings close to each other and one is less healthy,
One's crooked or whatever.
yeah, go ahead and take that one. Just like pruning a tree can be good for its health, selectively taking stuff down, as long as you selectively take the right stuff down, is actually healthier for the environment.
But also, like I said, back to my point, if they're doing this filming on their own land, they paid, they worked for the opportunity to be able to do with, their outdoor experience whatever they wanted.
No, if they're in the public eye, then they are subject to my opinions, and
Right.
I should have absolute influence over what they do on their own property.
So
I don't
be
think he
careful.
was I don't think he was necessarily talking about the public thing, but
Yeah.
I mean, to that point though, Robbie, is like if you go buy a piece of land, is it your right to cut it down? Well, yeah, absolutely. But that isn't just because it's your right doesn't mean necessarily it's and I'm just playing devil's advocate here. If I go buy, 100,000 acres of prime national forest somehow, and then I just go burn it all down, I mean, is it my right to do it? Yeah. Is it a good thing to do it? No.
Why
You know?
were you doing it?
Yeah.
Just to watch the
Don't
world,
answer that.
just to watch the world burn.
I already know. See, and that's the thing. If I'm seeing this on video, you don't know why I just burnt down it. It could be because I'm co converting it to farm land to fix a problem that's
It was a
present in that area of a certain type of grain that's not available, and the livestock industry is suffering by having to pay
Yeah, but
exorbitant prices.
it
you're
was a
making an
control.
all-encompassing statement that says just because I own something, I have the right to destroy it.
Yes,
Yes,
you do.
you have the right to destroy it, but that doesn't mean that it is the right thing to do morally or ethically.
Unless, it's a controlled burn to destroy a fungus bloom that
That's
is
yeah, and that's fine. All I'm saying, I'm not saying that there's not good reasons to destroy it. I'm just saying that not every reason is a good reason.
What I'm saying is being devil's advocate is Robbie's gig, so quit poaching.
Okay,
Well,
well.
I'm just saying, if it ain't good, that's my problem.
But this
Maybe.
was a moral question, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a moral question.
So morally, you are obligated to have the education to know which is the proper trees to prune, and then prune those trees is okay.
Unless you're on your own property, and then morally do with it what you want.
In a moral way.
And everybody needs to stay out of everybody else's business when it's their own property, or their own footwear, or their own cheeseburger, or their own whatever. Morally, if you want to really change the world, change what you do and quit worrying so damn much about
Start,
everybody
are you
else.
saying start with the man in the mirror? Oh,
Yeah, there you go. Ooh, that was deep. That was nice.
ask him to make a change.
That's right. Start with the man in the mirror.
Robbie, you're just trying to get me to pop off, aren't you?
I was working at it, and you didn't take
Yeah.
the doggone bait. I don't.
I was getting ready to, and then Adam started interfering with all that Michael Jackson lyrics.
Hey, man,
Philosophy.
watch yourself. Dan, do you have anything to add to it on your side of it?
Not on the tree cutting thing.
Well, he's got the secondary question on the big knives versus axe and all. And I think there's a misconception in that question about us, actually.
Yeah. It's funny. I'm actually doing a video right now where I'm bringing out the question that we have to ask, and and discuss every year is the survival, outdoor, bushcraft, fieldcraft, whatever label that we give, like what kind of knives do we need? But Robbie, I'll let you go first on this one.
Well, just to clear up the misconception, where I live, I prefer a machete over an axe. I get more use out of a machete than I do an axe where I live.
Mm-hmm.
So that ends that aspect of it for me.
And when you come up to stay with me for a weekend.
Or go up to my in-law's place in Michigan.
Yeah.
You know, an axe starts becoming more useful.
I think both of y'all missed the single most important phrase in that question that answers itself.
Zombie?
No. No. Where he says it's more fun for them to use a big chopper.
Yeah.
That's the end of the question. If it's more fun for you to go out there and do it with a big zombie knife, there's no rules. You don't have to check the box.
I didn't miss that, Dan. I just hadn't had a chance to respond yet.
Sure you didn't.
I didn't. We can replay and we can, you know, listen to the audio and see that I had not yet responded yet.
Oh, okay. Man, you're a little sensitive today.
Am I sensitive, Dan?
You
am
are.
Am I taking your stick? Are you a little jealous?
Well, actually, guys, actually, if you guys want to be sticklers, I would like to know your opinions on very large knives, pretty much machetes on steroids.
Okay.
He is asking our opinions.
Well, so I've had both shoulders reconstructed, so I find...
We can build him better than he was.
Yeah.
So especially in the area I'm in now, I find an axe more efficient and easier to carry, and just generally easier on my body. So for the area I'm in, I prefer an axe. If I go down to visit Robbie, then you know, it's machete territory.
Well, I don't even think he's asking about machetes. Are you done, Dan? I don't want to interrupt you.
No, I feel good.
You know, I think, you know, like Dan said, if you want to have fun and go out there and swing a big machete, well, then have at it. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. I will say that there is, in my opinion, you know, it's not an effective and efficient use of your energy or the weight. But then again, I have a different objective than you. There, I had my big knife go out there and chop things down phase when I was, you know, 20 years old, and it was fun and going out there and seeing what I could do with this big old jalopy blade.
Back when you were wearing acid wash and pegging your jeans.
That's right. But that, you know, that time has kind of passed for me, and there's nothing wrong with that. And I'm not saying that I'm a grown up now. It comes down to kind of what Dan says, you know. When I get out there, I kind of want to chill and relax and not bust my butt on slinging around a big piece of steel. I want to go down there, get the job done, and sit by the fire and have a cup of coffee. And when the sun goes down, have a couple sips of bourbon and enjoy a pleasant conversation with my friends.
A couple.
Yeah. I'm sorry. that's just my style now. It's not wrong. It's not right. It just is what I – It meets the objectives that I have when I go out in the field. With that said, I do think there is some good utility for a big blade as a camp blade or something like that. I was talking about the BK9 on a video that will probably come out later this week, and just saying, hey, it's a good blade, but I've kind of moved away from that. The axe for me is when I'm either going out to find something to take down. Or it's staying at the camp with where it's going to be there to split up firewood. It's not, you know, I'm not trekking with the axe, so that's kind of a different need as well. But I don't know. Just when you, I've just got to the point where if I'm here, I don't need anything bigger than a small 5/6 inch blade in my axe. Now, yeah, if I go down to Robbie's, well, then you know I'll probably throw a machete out, you know, into my vehicle. Last time I was down there camping, we were in an area where we weren't doing that much trailblazing, so we didn't really even need a machete. So, Robbie?
I would also like to point out, just for clarification, and I think I'm gonna say this. I think you two guys agree with me on this. There's a little bit of confusion.
Ambiguity, maybe?
There you go. On the
Why you gotta be that guy, Adam?
On the term big knife?
He was trying really hard, Dan.
Help the special kid out, please.
Yeah.
On the term big knife, we talk against a big knife, but maybe we've been lax in our communications because we all three understand what we mean when we say it. I don't mean a long knife, and I don't even really mean a thick knife. I mean a knife that is too thick for its width for the grind to be practical.
Yeah. I was about to say, I kind of do mean a thick knife.
Well, if you give me a knife that's a quarter inch thick, but the blade is 6 inches wide, that's a lot of real estate to go from one quarter to zero.
Yeah, well, that's a cleaver.
Hey, one man's cleaver is another man's knife, you know?
Fair point.
But I'm just saying, and there you go again with terminology can confuse things. I think what we all can universally agree on is what we're talking about is when a blade gets so thick for its width that you can no longer have really good edge geometry, you're carrying wasted weight. You're carrying wasted blade steel because you can't get the utility out of it.
Well, and if you're trying to clean fish with an 18-inch machete, it can be as much as long as the length and the width is appropriate to the job you're doing.
Right.
But both length and width can interfere with that.
And to be also clear, at least from my perspective, that range, it's not an exact size. There's a range there, you know, and where a knife falls in that range is going to, it will make a difference in the amount of utility I can see in that particular tool, and by association, then also whether I find it a wise design or not, or a wise choice or not.
And he said what 3/16 inch thick on that blade?
Yeah,
which. I would prefer not to swing a blade that big because it's going to be heavy.
At 18 inches long.
Yeah.
It's 2 pounds and 3 ounces for that blade he referred to that they enjoy using.
Yeah. And as a young man, I would probably enjoy that. As an older guy with bad shoulders, it's not the right knife for me. But
I might would enjoy it as long as somebody else toted it to camp and I didn't have to use it.
It's That's true.
The knife that the hooligan he's referring to is a full flat grind, it appears, with a small secondary, really interesting looking medieval type looking blade.
It reminds me of like a hoplite sword.
Yeah, it looks like it would be a lot of fun. Yep. And if somebody else towed it to camp and said, here, play with that and go crazy, I probably would. You know, I probably would just enjoy the snot out of playing with it. But if I was packing my own bag to go out there and had to tote it, there's probably for me other choices that would, be a wiser.
2 pounds, choice. I can carry a lot of bourbon for 2 pounds.
Yeah, we got priorities when we go out in the field, guys.
Steak and bourbon take precedence.
Yeah.
Gosh, you know that steak and bourbon camp out podcast. That's what we need to do.
Yeah, but we need to start it before either one of those two items come out.
Yeah. Because then we get the sleepies.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Who we need to have for that is Chef Muss.
There we go.
Then I'd be even more worthless because I wouldn't even need to help with the steak or anything. It would just be
sitting
around and...
I think Local 3 has 136 varieties of bourbon stocked at the bar.
Dan, was it you telling me about the barbecued oysters?
Like... Oysters Rockefeller or like steamed?
No, like barbecued, like on a grill.
Yeah.
Was it you or was it my dad? It might have been my dad.
I mean, I've done them before, again, like an Oysters Rockefeller where you put some bacon and some cheese and then bake them in the shell, bake them on the half shell in the grill.
Okay. All right. Yeah, but I can see us all in the field doing that. So... Well, that was a good question. Thank you very much for your question.
We got one more question.
Shoot it.
And this is from Randy K.
Okay.
I have a question that I hope one or all of you can answer or get feedback on. Question. Would using a hydration pack as a bug out bag be a good idea or no? I have been using a tactical backpack as a bug out bag, but I recently bought a hydration backpack that was on sale, and I thought I can't use this. It is smaller, and you can't put that much in this. It's true, but I could use it to get home to get to my other bug out bag or just a bag to get home. Please, any thought or info you gentlemen could give would be great.
Robbie, you want to start with that one?
I'll start it, sure. Randy, first off, you didn't give us enough information on what bug out means to you, how far you're going, whether a bug out means you're leaving home and never coming back, or you just going 2 miles through the woods to your secret location where you already have other supplies packed. Also, the importance of water. We don't know what environment you're in. Where I live, having a hydration pack would be a lot different than if you lived in the desert. There's aspects of environmental choices there that we can't speak to. We also don't know what your skill level is. If we take somebody like, let's say my son, for example, at 11 years old, he would need a whole lot more gear to be able to survive any kind of long term out there than our friend Madison Parker, who trains Navy SEALs how to live off the land. Madison could go out there with just his underwear and a nice kitchen knife, and he'd have a new civ
Underwear and a pair of nail clippers.
yeah, he'd have a new civilization built inside of a week. So all those type of things go into answering your question. And there wasn't really enough info in the question to address our questions that we would have for you. With that said, if you feel like that smaller bag doesn't have the capacity necessary to handle your ideas of a bug out, you have two options. One, use it for the short haul, like you mentioned. And number two, improve your skill set so that you can live off of what will fit in that smaller bag. And I guess there is a third option. eBay the heck out of that smaller bag, get your money back, and find yourself something else you like better. Think I'm done.
All right. To piggyback on that, I mean, I've actually gone to a very smaller, I think, what is that, 1200 inches, smaller EDC bag. My kit's pretty compact, but I also stage my kits in different parts. So I have, initial kit at home, initial kit in my vehicle to upgrade whatever I need if I was in a quote unquote bug out situation. But of course, again, my definition of a bug out situation might vary in regards to yours. But there, I know there's some good hydration packs out there that are, like that hydrate or die stuff that came out by CamelPak is they're pretty squared away bags. So I don't know if you're just talking about one of the simple ones that runners wear that's really small, that you can add onto a secondary kit, or you're talking about one of these bags that has hydration function. Because like a CamelPak Motherlode, that's a huge bag. You know what I mean? That's way bigger bag than I think Robbie or I tend to use nowadays. So yeah, a little bit more information. But I mean, if it works for you, it works for you. And you can always do give it a test, man. Take it out in the field for a couple of days, see what you can pack in there and wear comfortably,
There
or
you go.
you can add a some other piece of equipment to it. That's in your car that if you're just grabbing and dashing. That you can throw on, some kind of like, haversack or something they can use in conjunction with that.
Yeah, I hate to interject on you, Adam, but just like you and I have been talking about a lot recently, putting your primary, most important stuff in your on your physical person in your pockets or maybe on your belt, and then using the bag for the additional stuff.
That's right. That's right. Dan, what you got?
You really haven't left much to add. I was going to start with, what is bug out? I would need a clearer answer on what he's considering bugging out. And then I would just continue to repeat everything y'all just said.
I'm glad we have you here, Dan.
Yeah, that's what I'm here for. Pay the bills and fill the dead air.
There you go. Good question, though.
Yeah, it was a good question. To your point, I would love for him to go take it for a test run and then let us know how it did.
Yeah, Send us a video.
Hey, that would be a new concept, a video.
Hey, you can share it on the E2E website with the whole gang. So, Robbie, do we have anything else question-wise?
That is our listener questions for this episode.
Perfect.
So this would be a good opportunity to tell everyone, send us more.
Yeah, and send them to podcast@equiptindoor.com. And, you know, when we have consecutive episodes in a row, we'll get right on them.
Oh, my goodness, guys.
What's up?
Adam, you just reminded me of something.
What's that?
I've got to rant real fast.
Well, you got about, I'll give you 8 minutes.
Yeah, I won't take that long.
Okay.
You told everybody to send it to questions@podcast.
Yeah.
You know I received those emails, right?
Yeah.
You guys, I should have forwarded it to you guys before I deleted it, but I didn't. We actually got spammed at Podcast for Equipped to Endure by a matchmaking service and some chick wanting Podcast at Equipped to Endure to establish a relationship with her. She thought they would be a great fit together. And so if the Podcast at Equipped to Endure email goes away, it's because it ran off with some lady named Janet and has established their life together and have us a white, you know, picket fence house with 2.5 kids and a golden retriever now.
You know, I always wondered if that how stable that podcast at equiptindoor.com was.
Yeah.
You know.
That's carrying spam a little too far.
What, you had something, Dan. Did you lose it?
I edited it.
Wow. Look, Robbie, he's growing up, man.
I know. In a way, I'm proud, and in another way, it's sad. I can just remember when he was a little nothing running around screaming obscenities and drunk.
Well, some things change, some things don't.
Now look at him.
Now I just keep it all on the inside.
Yeah.
Now you're just needing therapy like the rest of us.
It's better that way.
Trust me, guys, it hadn't gone away.
So what else did we have, fellas?
Well, Dan's got some interesting story. We don't have much time, Dan, but let's jump into some of them.
Let's go to
something you like, Dan.
Let's go to the nuclear Easter egg hunt in Georgia.
Ah.
Just off Tybee Island near Savannah, a 1950s era fully functional nuclear device was discovered by a Canadian tourist that was scuba diving.
Those Canadians, always up in everybody's business.
Apparently we need them for arms inspectors.
Yeah.
That makes me so angry.
That they found it and you didn't?
Do you know how many of my inventions would be right now changing the world if I had access to some, you know, nuclear power?
I keep telling you can get everything you want in Georgia.
Yeah, plutonium is so doggone hard to get your hands on around here. I mean, Walmart don't carry it.
You need that. You need that 1.21 gigawatts.
Yeah. My flux capacitor is sitting here just going to waste.
Yeah. Continue, well, Dan.
So the backstory is there was a mid-air collision in the 50s with a standoff bomber, and it was determined that it would be safer for them to drop. You know, it wasn't armed to drop the payload in the ocean before they crash landed, which they did, but no one was ever able to find the nuclear device. So it's been a little known or a poorly kept secret on the Georgia coast since the 50s that there was a nuclear warhead out there. And apparently these two divers, one of them saw what he thought was an oil barrel and started digging around. And he thought it was strange because it was bigger than an oil barrel. And then he saw an inspection plate that said Mark 15 thermonuclear bomb on it. And apparently, after cleaning out his wetsuit, he called local authorities. And after much concern and consideration, a team of SEALs went in and disarmed and removed it.
You said at one point there was 50 agencies there on site?
Yeah, I was looking for – I found a couple of reports, and I was looking for that one. But, yes, there was it took, I think, 24 or 48 hours to get it out, and part of that was a lot of negotiation over who exactly had authority over the site.
Yeah, Adam, I'm surprised they didn't call you over there.
Yeah, I know, right?
And I have reason to believe that while everybody was debating who had authority – DOD showed up with a couple of warships, pulled it out, and left.
Nice.
I'm paraphrasing there. I have no proof. Nobody get angry at me, but
how dare you, sir?
the underground version I heard was that he'd called 911, and I can only imagine how many bells, whistles, and whatnot went off.
Yeah. Well, I'm surprised I mean, knowing Department of Defense, they probably had a team of guys that was trained on that apparatus or that piece of equipment. That
Apparently,
if they ever found it, I mean, knowing DOD, how they like to stand by, hurry up and wait.
they
They
had
probably
four
had a,
plans.
yeah, they
Well,
probably had they probably had contingencies for that finding that weapon.
working on my understanding is some of the EOD training is doing just that, disarming that kind of stuff. But
Well,
yeah, at one point they had 20 ships and 1,500 men in the area.
let me tell you something. From a scuba diver standpoint, I can tell you that if a civilian scuba diver found that thing, by the time anybody else got there, it had already been confirmed it was completely safe. Because we will play with anything we find underwater.
Well, and that's one of the things to keep in mind is this was dropped somewhere around 1955 from a damaged aircraft, and it sat in the bottom of the ocean for what, almost 60 years. It was not leaking radiation. It never detonated.
I mean, were they still prime with TNT back in the day?
I don't think so. It takes a significant amount of explosive force to start the chain
Reaction.
reaction.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine something from the 50s that was mounted on a what do they say? I think it was a Sabre that collided with, I'm trying to remember which type of bomber. But no, I imagine it was, at least something like Composition B or one of the high explosives. Yeah, and this was a 3.8 megaton bomb.
Damn.
From a diver standpoint, I can promise you he tapped on that thing with his dive knife and tried to roll it around.
Yeah.
Oh,
Well,
yeah.
he freely admitted that he was trying to dig it out.
Yeah, oh,
Yeah.
yeah.
It was it was mounted on a B-47 Stratojet.
Did he get a reward for that?
It doesn't say.
Yeah, all of his cancer treatment for the exposure to the nuclear waste is being footed by the federal
Well,
government. His reward is
I
not telling
doubt that
anybody he tried to
it's
set it
leaking
off.
anything radioactive because I mean the technology is so sensitive nowadays. Well, that is a lot of water though. Water does blow
Now,
up a lot.
if it were leaking, someone would have been able to find it.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that's where I was going with.
That's why they couldn't find it. I mean, there have been plenty of people actively looking for it.
They don't build them like they used to.
No.
Nuclear weapons. They don't build them like they used to.
That's right. Good find, Dan. Very good find. Any other quick stories before we wrap this one up, guys?
We can tease people with the new 50 caliber minigun.
Oh, please do.
A couple episodes back, I debuted my new zombie apocalypse want vehicle, and I have decided that the turret ring needs the new 3-barrel 50 caliber minigun that's out. Because you never know when I'm going to need to fire off 50 caliber rounds at 1,000 rounds a minute.
I will say I will be having some gun talk here soon. I just qualified at the range the other day, Robbie, and they made us watch this video about the sheriff's deputy. He was at a gun store and he's trying to pick up a new pistol, had his duty weapon
Oh,
out,
I saw that.
and he's putting his duty weapon back in his holster, and his zipper pull to his windbreaker got caught in the trigger guard and caused an accidental discharge. I mean, it was like just the perfect circumstances. Like he put it in his holster and then he repositioned his jacket, and the jacket, the strap to the windbreaker, just caught the trigger just right on the Glock 23 and shot himself in the leg.
Oh, that's different.
Yeah, this was crazy, man. This is like, and so this is the third or fourth incident that this has happened, recently. And you're getting to a area where a lot of officers are wearing these kind of holsters and these kind of jackets off duty. So we have 511 jackets with all these zippers and pulls and all this other stuff. So our firearms guys are, saying, "Hey, pull out these jackets, cut off all these straps." I wear a high jacket. When it was a Bowler, I think they used to make our stuff, but now we're going to the 511s, and the 511 jackets are lower, and they actually cover up your duty gear. And so you have these zippers on the side that you zip up so you can expose your holster and everything. But I like those high jackets that don't go any lower than your navel, and all your gear is always exposed. And so, I didn't turn mine in. So I'm keeping that jacket. I'm not messing with this other one. But I'm going to do a video. I'm actually thinking about, Robbie, changing my off-duty carry for my Glock 23 to getting one of those XDs with the back safety, just for that very reason. You know what I mean? I can't go back to a weapon that needs to have a manual safety.
Right.
I need something built in, but at least with that back safety with the XDs, it's better than just the trigger safety. So, Dan, what were you saying?
The video I had seen was it was a guy at a gun store, and he was looking at a secondhand firearm
Yeah.
and dry fired it to find out that it had been loaded.
Really?
Yeah, so it had been sitting on the sales counter. Best anybody can tell, somebody bought it and then put it back in the sold section, and it was never cleared.
Wow.
So it was, someone very experienced with firearms. It was an off-duty deputy,
Don't
and
necessarily mean it was very experienced.
fair point.
Yeah.
There was just the number of hands that thing had gone through, and nobody had ever cleared it.
That's crazy. I mean, I don't. The first thing I do is I always clear a weapon, even if I just watched you clear it, I will pick it up and clear it myself, because I believe in magic. They can be that magic bullet in there that jumps in there and, ruins my freaking life. No way.
Man, I had a proud papa moment. Over the holidays, dad, my oldest went down to visit my parents, and my dad took him quail hunting. And dad thought he was going to be funny and palmed a shell back into an over and under, and handed it to Jack and was going to try to bait him into an accidental discharge. And he'd cleared the gun in front of Jack and then palmed a shell back into it and handed it to him and said, "Oh, don't worry, son, it's not loaded." And Jackson breaks it open, pulls out the shell, and hands it to him. And apparently the dog handler just lost it when Jackson looked at my dad and said, "Granddad, my daddy says it doesn't matter if Jesus Christ himself hands you a fire gun, you check it every damn time."
That's right. Good job. Good job, Robbie. You had something.
Oh, I was just going to comment on Dan's 50 caliber minigun and say that, if the character Mac in the movie Predator had had that instead of the minigun he had, that movie would have ended a whole lot sooner.
Yeah, and they actually in the video they show it mounted on a technical, and it's just sick.
I imagine.
I kind of feel like I've gotten to that point where I got the guns that I need. It's not that I don't like to play with guns, and if somebody gets a new toy and they're like, "Hey man, you want to come out and shoot?" I'll be like, "Yeah, I'm good. Let's go.
I'm not.
We'll go shoot." But it, like some to play with something like that once, I'd be down. I'd be
I'm as
I'd
long
get excited about it.
as long as I didn't have to clean it.
Oh
Yeah,
yeah, Jesus.
I'm not to that. I've got everything I want and need standpoint since Glock just came out with the single stack. 9mm.
Oh yeah.
I may have to have one of those, and I'm gonna say it's not for me, it's for my wife. But I may have to have one of those.
Have at it, my friend.
I think it fills an itch.
Yeah. I
Or
don't
it
know.
scratches an itch, one of the two, I'm not sure. It either
Hey,
fills an itch or scratches an itch, but either way, I may need one.
there's always a little room in the safe.
Well, you're on a whole different level, Dan. I can't ever keep up with the way you buy firearms. You're the man.
Actually, no.
You slowed down a little bit.
Well, it's partly that, and partly you've got to remember, I've got, 3 or 4 generations worth of collected firearms.
That's true. That's
Now,
true.
I got stuff that my great grandfather had.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That is.
But I've got a line on a Marlin Camp 45 that will be mine.
All right, guys. Well, we're going to end it there. We get a little bit extra this episode. But you guys, if you have any questions or comments, again, email us at podcast@equippedtoendure.com. And make sure you guys check out the website at www.equippedtoendure.com. Become a sponsor today. Join some great content on there from additional videos, articles, blogs. Of course, the your personal profile where you can share your own videos and photographs. And then, of course, our forums. And it's springtime, so I know the self-directed learning stuff will start going again. Those guys are awesome. And we'll talk to you guys here real soon. We'll be back next week. And Robbie, anything else before we roll out?
Send in those emails.
There we go. All right, you guys take care. Be safe out there. And remember, if you're not always prepared, you're never prepared. Thanks.